Hey, well, hello and welcome to Tara Marie Live. Yes, I'm your host, Tara Marie Segundo, and I'll be with you here for the next 2 hours from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 5 Pacific, and actually every Monday through Friday. That's what I was trying to say when I stumbled on my words. Every Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 5 Pacific on American Latino Radio Channel 154. Now, my show is about all aspects of our health, the mental, the emotional, the physical, the social, and the spiritual sides of what make us up as people. Because we know now, and science is confirming this, that if all these aspects of us are fed and are healthy, we have health, we have happiness, we are optimized, we are living our best life. If one of these areas is out of whack, it's hard because the other areas are going to suffer somewhat. And we know that attitude is most of life. Most of what happens in life can be dealt with in one of two ways, with a good attitude and a bad attitude. And we're going to be looking at this today because we're talking about a subject that's really not a fun subject to discuss. It's actually a very frightening subject. And statistically, because I was doing some digging around today, it's very close to the Latino community, and this scares me more. We're talking about dementia. Now, there are different types of dementia, but the single word alone, just dementia, is very terrifying. It's terrifying to be diagnosed with dementia, and it's very frightening for the patient's loved ones. Most people hearing my voice understand what this is. Either we ourselves have had an early onset diagnosis of dementia. There are people listening that I know this is the case with you, or someone you love has been diagnosed. I know with my grandfather on my mother's side, he died in a nursing home with dementia, and I know what that's like. And it's very hard to watch a person literally fade away from the person he or she used to be. Now, these are some scary statistics, and I was able to find these statistics, but interestingly, I don't understand why. So maybe this is something we can try to figure out together. It's estimated that during the first half of the 21st century we're in, the number of Latinos suffering from Alzheimer's disease and related dementias could increase more than sixfold, from fewer than 200,000 today to as many as 1.3 million by 2050. Now, see, that's very scary to me. They didn't say why, but they're saying the statistic. According to the Alzheimer's Disease Facts and Figures Report, Latinos are about 1.5 more times likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than whites. Again, don't know why, but this is the statistic. Here's something else. Risk factors for vascular disease like diabetes or high blood pressure and high cholesterol may also be risk factors for Alzheimer's disease and stroke-related dementia. And we know that Latinos in the United States have higher rates of diabetes, and putting this puts them at a greater risk for Alzheimer's disease. We actually were just talking about diabetes yesterday. So these are all things we want to consider. But what's most concerning to me is how the rates are so quickly on the rise. Now, this scary and heartbreaking information and a diagnosis of dementia can leave people feeling absolutely hopeless, even helpless, and somewhat lost. So what do you do if this fate befalls you or someone you love? Sometimes in life, we don't know what we're made of until we have to step up to the plate and deal with a difficult and life-changing situation. And that's what we're talking about today. My guest today had to do just that. She was going along happily in life with a great career and a great husband. And then she got the news that no one wants to hear. Your husband has dementia. Now, what transpired in the years to follow, she writes about beautifully in her forthcoming book, The Man Who Wasn't Really There. And her hope with this book is to help other caregivers and patients survive the same ordeal should the situation arise, God forbid. So let me welcome my guest, Dr. Carol W. Berman. She's a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU Medical Center here in Manhattan. She's also in private practice and is the author of two books in her field. And today we're talking again, as I said, about her forthcoming book, The Man Who Wasn't Really There, which is the story of her journey through her husband's illness and sadly his eventual death from dementia. So let's bring her on the line. Hello, Dr. Berman. How are you?
Hi, Tara Marie. How are you doing?
It's so nice to talk to you. I was very, very moved by, this is your forthcoming book, obviously, but you have written some very, very beautiful articles in the Huffington Post. You have a monthly column in the Huffington Post.
That's right.
Yeah, and you sent me, you know, I said, well, you know, since the book isn't out yet, can you send me some articles? And you sent me 3, 4, 5 very, very beautiful articles that really hit the nail on the head. I would imagine that, actually 6 articles, I would imagine that 5 articles, yeah, 5 articles, because I found another one. I would imagine that this kind of writing is what made you say, hey, this is a book. I mean, there's a book in here to help other people.
Absolutely. After I started writing these articles, I thought the best thing is to put them together in a book so that people would be able to be helped with this. There are a lot of caregivers out there right now taking care of Alzheimer's patients and other kinds of dementia patients, and I think this book would be of great help to them.
Well, and also, you know, I've done shows before, not on this network, but in, you know, I used to be on another network. I've done shows before about the nitty gritty of Alzheimer's disease, more from a medical perspective. I've never done a show from the perspective of the caregiver. And the reason I think this show is so important is the caregivers are sort of the forgotten patients in a way.
Absolutely.
You know, all the attention goes to the ailing patient. The caregiver, though, so often is suffering so greatly, too, but usually suffering in silence.
That's exactly right, Tara Marie. I see so many patients of my own who are taking care of their loved ones who have dementia, and they are suffering silently or in my office when they're telling me about what they're experiencing with their loved ones.
Oh, excuse me. I thought you were going to say something. Okay, yes. So they're suffering silently. And also, I think one of the reasons that they suffer in silence is there's this feeling of, I shouldn't complain. I'm not sick.
That's, you know, right, because so much attention is on the patient. Hardly any attention goes on the person who's taking care of the patient.
Yes. And this is, here's another reason we need to think about this. You know, those were some scary statistics. I don't know, you know, when I started looking into this show, I don't know why Latinos have such an increased risk as opposed to Caucasians for Alzheimer's dementia. I don't know why it's predicted that that the rates are going to increase 6 times between now and 2050. I do know, though, that when we see different diseases on the rise, like I said before, different vascular diseases, and in our population, we're very high in diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, that these are, you know, medical reasons that someone would have the propensity toward developing Alzheimer's disease. I know that all these diseases are getting on the rise, and they're kind of blowing out into epidemic proportion, but they're also touching people at younger and younger ages. Now, your husband was not a terribly old man when he got his diagnosis, was he?
No, he was in his 70s, and he didn't have any of these risk factors that you just mentioned. These are very important risk factors: hypertension, yeah, diabetes, cholesterol increase, and obesity are the biggest risk factors for, and this is why the Latino population might have a greater risk, because sometimes these issues are not addressed. But I would encourage people to go to their primary care practitioner and check out their blood pressure and check out their blood sugar, check out their cholesterol levels, so that if they keep these things in line, hypertension, diabetes, and high cholesterol and obesity, then maybe they can prevent getting dementia. We're not sure of that, but I would say, you know, double check these things, and then maybe we could do some prevention.
Right. And one of the things, like, because again, yesterday we were doing a show that touched on diabetes. One of the things that frightens me is all of these risk factors that you just mentioned, all the vascular risk factors, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, we're seeing them in younger and younger and younger and younger populations, even like little children.
That's right.
You know, little children that aren't even teenagers yet. When a child gets these conditions, these comorbidities that go along with obesity, that child's body has to sustain the punishing. Just the nature of obesity is that it beats your body up. The earlier you become obese, the longer your body has to be beaten up, which is probably why we're seeing younger and younger rates of onset of dementia. You know, back, Carol, Dr. Berman, I'm 49. Back in my day growing up, dementia was something old people's grandparents got. It wasn't something that, I mean, a 50-year-old, you know, would get.
That's right. Absolutely. But we're seeing it more and more. So I think it has to do with diet as well. Now that we know, yeah, I'm sure you were doing some shows on diet and exercise, and you're so good with that.
But, well, and also the toxins in the environment, different things that are coming at us, pesticides, herbicides. These all basically, you guys, just change the brain. And what Alzheimer's disease is it's basically a disease of the brain, but it can start, its genesis can be from anywhere in the body. Now, Dr. Berman, before we get into the emotional aspects, let's just clarify, there are different types of dementia. Yeah. In your articles, now let me ask you this, if someone goes to the Huffington Post, can someone find archives of all these articles that you sent me?
Absolutely. Just go to my name, Carol W. Berman, and look up different articles, and you'll see all these different articles. As you said, the five articles on dementia.
Yeah.
And then I have some other articles on other mental diseases that people could have.
Okay, so yeah, Dr. Carol W. Berman, The Huffington Post.
Right.
So in your article, you mentioned that there are different types of dementia. There's Alzheimer's dementia, which is very commonly discussed. Vascular dementia, which would relate to what we just discussed that has to do with other vascular diseases. Lewy body dementia, dementia due to HIV. There's Pick's dementia. There's Huntington's dementia. Now, to just be clear and just for our audience, you say that there are basically four main types of dementia.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah. So number one, what would that be?
That would be Alzheimer's. Most people are familiar with Alzheimer's.
Yes.
And about 50% or more of people diagnosed with dementia will get Alzheimer's. And the reason that Alzheimer's is the most common is that it has these tangles and plaques in the brain. And they could actually see this on autopsy. You can't see it. When you do an MRI or a CAT scan of a patient's brain, you would just see atrophy of the brain. The brain is diminished and looks smaller than an average brain.
Yeah.
But when they actually open up the brain, if they do an autopsy, they'll see these plaques and tangles in the brain, and that makes a diagnosis of Alzheimer's. Then the next one that's very common is vascular.
Yeah.
And this is due to decreased blood flow to the brain. It could come from strokes, or it could come from anything that compromises the brain and causes less blood flow. And so a person would have what's called vascular dementia. And this is about 25% of the types of dementia. Then we come to the third kind, which is Lewy body dementia. And this is what my husband had. This is a rare type. It's about 15% of the people.
Mm.
And what it is, there are certain little cells in the brain that get destroyed, and these are called dopamine cells. That dopamine is a certain neurotransmitter that we see in Parkinson's. It's decreased in Parkinson's, and it's decreased in Lewy body dementia, so that people have less of this dopamine, so they can't move around as well. They get dementia. They have stiffness. They have tremors.
May I ask you a question? Is with Lewy body and also Parkinson's, is that it's less dopamine, or the dopamine receptor cells die?
Well, it's less dopamine.
Okay.
And the dopamine cells themselves die, and they make these little things called Lewy bodies. That's how it gets the name Lewy body dementia. There was a scientist back in, I guess, the 1900s, Dr. Lewy, and he discovered these kind of cells that produce dopamine. And when they die, you know, you get Parkinson's, and in many cases, you'll get dementia with the Parkinson's.
Oh, got you. Okay, yeah, I think that's what got you. That now you're making me think of it, just non sequitur, Robin Williams. I believe that he had that. Yeah, they think that he had Parkinson's disease, and people can't cope with the idea, and that may have fed into his suicide. May I ask you a question about vascular strokes? Vascular dementia. Now you're making me think, you know, again, when you do a show every day and I talk to all these very interesting people about all these very interesting different subjects, I start to see like a through line, and I start to see a lot of correlation. If vascular dementia has to do with decreased blood flow to the brain, I'll bet there's a correlation with, like, for instance, men with erectile dysfunction, for instance. Do you know what I mean? Because often I've done shows about erectile dysfunction where, you know, I mean, obviously men who have vascular and coronary, you know, cardiovascular issues often have erectile dysfunction. I wonder if there's a correlation there.
There could be a correlation there. I'm not familiar with all the statistics
exactly
how that's related, but it makes sense if you're not getting blood flow into different areas.
Yeah.
You might not get blood flow into the brain as well.
Right. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because these are like early warning signs. Like these are dots you want to connect. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're a man and you have erectile dysfunction, you want to think about other parts of your health, i.e. the brain, your heart, things like that, because these are all just signs of bigger issues in the body. And again, those that attack the brain, these are the ones that take us down. And then, okay, so then there's one more. You said it's a frontotemporal dementia.
Yeah, frontotemporal dementia. This is very rare. It's like a 2-5% of people. And it used to be called Pick's dementia. And
okay.
It has to do with, the frontal lobes of the brain and the temporal lobes, which are parts of the brain on the side. They have diminished capacity. And so, you know, people start, and these are people who are under 60 years old. This is very rare. But I think there's a movie out now called Still Alice.
Yes.
And Julianne Moore is in it. I haven't seen it, but I want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
She portrays a young woman in her 50s who starts getting this type of dementia and goes through a whole thing with her family. I mean, this is such a widespread topic, and so many people are suffering from this. It's going to be epidemic.
Yeah. I mean, like every other disease in this country, it's going to reach epidemic proportions, and I don't know how we're going to handle it, because with people living longer and longer and longer, they're not necessarily living better. And this is an issue. Listen, we're going to go and come right back. You guys were with Dr. Carol W. Berman. We're talking about dementia, basically. It's very scary, but these are things we need to talk about. And basically, we're talking about her forthcoming book, The Man Who Wasn't Really There, her story and her journey with her husband through his illness and his eventual death from dementia. I'm Tara Marie Segundo. You're listening to Tara Marie Live, and we'll be right back after this. Do stay with us, and I'm going to throw out the call-in line.
This is Channel 154, American Latino Radio.
If you have kids in your life, you need to know about the only multivitamin patented for learning and academic performance to help your kids do their very best in school. Used for over 10 years in public schools, Potential is designed by a doctor to support brain function by nourishing a growing brain with active vitamins, important minerals, and antioxidants from superfruits and berries. Designed to be clean and wholesome, Potential doesn't contain additives, preservatives, artificial colors, flavors, and sugar found in most other kids' vitamins. Being a kid today isn't easy, so give the kids you love every advantage with Potential. To learn more, visit mykidspotential.com and use the special coupon code RADIO, or call 877-877-4566 to order. That's mykidspotential.com, or call 877-877-4566. Help your kids do their very best to succeed. Give them potential today.
Are you satisfied with your health and happiness? Do you like where your life is going? I'm fitness expert and personal trainer Tara Marie Segundo, host of Tara Marie Live on American Latino Radio, Channel 154. I invite you to join me Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 5 Pacific. It's time to kick your life into high gear and create the health and happiness you deserve. Call me at 888-411-7242 with all your questions about whole person health. You're not just a body and a brain. You're an integrated system, and in order to be truly healthy and happy, you need to focus on the development of the mental, emotional, physical, social, and spiritual sides of you. So get ready to join the conversation on Tara Marie Live, weekdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 5 Pacific, right here on American Latino Radio, Channel 154.
Got a question? Don't be shy. It's your health. Call Tara Marie now, 1-888-411-7242.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to Tara Marie Live. Yes, I'm your host, Tara Marie Segundo. Today we're talking about dementia. Very, very scary. But we're not talking about it in a medical sense necessarily. We're talking about it from the standpoint of those of us that are watching it, those of us who are doing the caretaking, those of us who are left behind, and the aftermath, and the before, and the during, and the after, and how hard it is, because when all the attention goes on the patient, those of us who are caretaking can feel neglected. Often we can feel hopeless, helpless, depressed. If you can identify with this, we want to hear from you. Give us a call. It's our toll-free nationwide line, 888-411-7242, 888-411-7242. My guest is Dr. Carol W. Berman. So, Dr. Berman, so we were talking about, you know, we just talked about the four main types of dementia, Alzheimer's disease being the most common. 50% or more of people with dementia have Alzheimer's disease. You say that they're all incurable. And yes, that the curable types, you say, though, there are some curable types.
Oh, there are some curable types, and that's why you have to go to your primary care practitioner and get all kind of blood tests and make sure that you don't have. There are actually a few of them that are curable. For instance, if a person has hypothyroidism, which is hypo, H-Y-P-O, the small, in other words, you have a thyroid that's functioning less than well, you can get thyroid medication, which will make your thyroid function well, and then you won't have dementia from it. I've seen people get dementia from having low thyroid function, which is ridiculous because they can get medication that would help that immediately. And then also vitamin B deficiency could cause dementia, and all you need is a shot of vitamin B12, and you could be helped very quickly with that.
Is it specifically B12, Dr. Berman, or is it all the B vitamins?
Well, we do need all the B vitamins, but it's specifically B12 which causes dementia if you don't have any B12.
Oh.
And in our country, usually all the food is reinforced with vitamin Bs and things, so we usually don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But in some other countries, like in Africa and some parts of Asia, people do have vitamin B12 deficiency.
Okay.
Sometimes vegetarians, pure vegans or vegetarians, might get it. So you have to check your vitamin B12 level to make sure you're not low on that.
Okay.
And then we have syphilis, which some people might have. They don't think that's around anymore, but people are still getting syphilis. And that's, thank God, we have cures for that. We have penicillin and other medications to get rid of syphilis. But in the 1800s, early 1900s, before we had penicillin, people used to get dementia and all kinds of terrible things from syphilis.
Yeah, I always heard syphilis made you crazy.
Yes, it used to make people crazy because it affects the brain. Those spirochetes go into the brain, and then they could cause mental illness.
Got it.
They could cause dementia. But now we're very lucky we can get rid of it. So people have to be tested for that. And another rare type of disease that could cause dementia is Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm.
People pick this up on Long Island or in Connecticut or, you know, unfortunately, in the northeast area here, we could get Lyme disease.
Yeah, I had it. I had it, yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't cause dementia in you.
Well, no, because thank goodness I was diagnosed. The key with Lyme disease is just being diagnosed quickly.
Good.
And getting on those horrible antibiotics. Yeah, I was on some wicked antibiotics for 3 solid weeks. It's not fun, but I'd rather do that than have, God forbid, Lyme disease, you know. Yeah.
Right.
So there are, you know, hypothyroidism, vitamin B12 deficiency, a venereal disease like syphilis or Lyme disease. They can contribute to probably dementia symptoms or, you know, dementia. But again, these are if you correct your thyroid, the dementia goes away.
Yeah.
So that's good news.
That is good news. So definitely need a checkup with all your blood tests with your primary care physician. Make sure you don't have any of these conditions which are curable. We're very lucky that people can, you know, cure themselves from those.
I've also read that, you know, a lot of times people who struggle with severe depression are either in, they're more likely, like there's a correlation between severe depression and dementia.
That's true. And we always try to make that distinguish those two things. Psychiatrists are always thinking about, is it depression or is it dementia when we have a patient in our office? So a lot of times older people will come in and they'll be very quiet and their memory will be decreased and their behavior will be strange and the relatives will think, well, this person must have dementia. But then when we test them, we see it's not dementia, it's depression. So a lot of times those two things, you know, a person can think you have one thing like dementia, but it's actually depression. So you
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because again, the hallmark, the cornerstone of depression is withdrawal, isolation, etc. And when someone has dementia, I would imagine that they tend naturally just to withdraw because they feel cut off from their environment.
That's right.
And I would imagine if you have dementia, it would create depression. Do you know what?
Yes, it does create depression.
Oh, that's very interesting, yet very sad. It's very, very sad, and it's very overwhelming. It really is. Now, what kind of dementia did your husband have? He had the Lewy body.
Yes, my husband had Lewy body dementia. And, you know, I didn't even know what it was. I was in denial about the whole thing. I thought, how could this very intelligent, wonderful man have anything wrong with him? And this is what happens with a lot of relatives when they look at their loved ones. They say, oh, this person is wonderful. How could they possibly have anything wrong with them? And we go into a state of denial where we're not acknowledging that the person could have something wrong. And this is what I did until I was confronted with it.
Yeah. Well, look, now, your husband was early 70s?
Early 70s, yeah.
And he was still working? I mean, it's not like he was retired sitting in a rocking chair, correct?
Right. He was an attorney, and he was a brilliant man. And I couldn't imagine. And also, the more brilliant the person is, the more ways they could cover it, and the more ways it seems like they're okay because they have so many pathways in the brain that they could use. A few pathways are left after the brain cells start dying. And it fools people thinking that, oh, this person is fine, but they're not fine.
Now, so you say that when you first started to notice you were in denial, and you recognize now that you were in denial.
Yes.
Is it common for the patient, because again, we're talking about you were sort of the observer, the caregiver. Is it common for the patient to, like, was he aware and sort of in denial himself? Did you ever talk to him about that when he was still lucid?
He was totally unaware. Like, let's say he did some things wrong. Mm-hmm. For instance, say we're in the supermarket and he gets change, and, you know, he gets the wrong change, and then we're looking at that change, and I said, well, gee, how could you know, the thing cost $5. How come, you know, you got back $2 and you gave her $10 or whatever it was? And then, you know, he would be a math major when he was back in high school or something, and he'd say, no, nothing happened. He would just deny it, and then I would say, well, you got the wrong change. You know, how did that happen? And then he'd find some excuse or something, say, oh, I wasn't looking, or I'm busy, I'm not thinking about it. But meanwhile, the guy couldn't make change anymore. He couldn't count.
But do you think he was in denial or was he confused? Like, I'm trying to get into the patient's head. Is there an awareness at some point before they start to just kind of lose it? Is there an awareness and they themselves are in denial because they don't want to believe it?
Well, I think they're in denial. And I think the awareness does not exist. They lose awareness. It's kind of like the consciousness of things goes away from them, which is a blessing.
Yeah.
Because if they were aware of it, you know, they couldn't exist. It would be so horrible for them to think, oh, my God, yeah, I'm losing it. I don't have any way to think anymore. I can't count. You know, so they have, I think Mother Nature gives them a denial so that they don't have to think about it and they don't have to acknowledge or confront the illness. And then other people around them start denying it because, you know, how could so-and-so?
Well, you just don't want to think. You just don't want to imagine it. Nobody. It's almost like, I don't know. It's almost like if you say it out loud, it's real. And if we don't say it out loud, if we don't talk about this, maybe we'll wake up tomorrow and things will be different. I mean, literally, I understand, like, it sounds, denial like that sounds crazy. Like, oh, who would think that? You get so desperate. You get to a state of desperation where you start to really believe your own denial.
That's right.
It's really,
really to be in denial about these things because it feels much better than confronting it and saying, okay, you know, here we have this terrible thing and the person is going to die in about 5 years because most people die in 5 years from the diagnosis. So you don't want to think that it's a death sentence and you're headed towards your loved one's death. So, you know, you go into a type of denial and it's a defense.
Now, that raises a question. People, I know that, for instance, my grandfather, who was in a nursing home, he was out of his mind. I mean, he had dementia, but he was as healthy as a horse physically. Why is it medically, from a medical standpoint, that people from diagnosis to death with Alzheimer's disease generally die? Because otherwise, they're often otherwise in rather good health.
That's right. My husband was in excellent health because we ate well and we exercised all the time and his body was fine. You know, his body didn't have hypertension. He didn't have diabetes. He didn't have obesity. He didn't have any of these risk factors that we were talking about at the top of the show. And he was very healthy physically, but he had this, I think it was genetic in his case, because his father had it before him.
Oh.
And we went through a whole thing with the father, taking care of the father, and I think it's in the family. It's probably in the genes, but they haven't discovered it yet with this particular one, Lewy body dementia. And Parkinson's is hereditary a lot of times as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be like that. But
are you okay?
Yes. I'm just, you know, this is emotionally difficult for me, too, to talk about.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. You know, I can imagine. It was my own mother. She died of a Parkinson's related disease. It was called progressive supranuclear palsy.
Oh, I know about that. Right?
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, I can tell you from someone who did it, to watch a person just disintegrate, literally like disintegrate before your eyes, day by day, week by week, it's like torture. I mean, it's just torture. I think anybody listening could understand. That's what the denial's about. Like, who wants to know this stuff?
That's right. And that's why it was easier for me to write about it, actually.
Yeah.
To get it out of my system than it is sometimes to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because I start thinking about it. Like, the most amazing, dramatic thing happened that brought my attention to it. We used to go to the post office every Friday night, and we'd file different cases that he had to file at the post office.
Uh-huh.
So we went to that one on 53rd and 3rd, if people know that post office in Manhattan here. And it's got a huge escalator going up and a huge escalator going down.
Uh-huh.
So we were standing on this big line and waiting for our turn. We went up to the clerk. We did our work with her, and she knew my husband because we always came every Friday night. And then afterwards, we started going down the down escalator. And then she called, and she said, "Wait a second, you forgot to sign a paper." So my husband was about halfway down this huge escalator, must be about 200 feet long, and he starts running up the down escalator to go back and sign the paper. And I freaked out, and I said, no, and I'm already down on the bottom there, and I'm saying, "Please, you know, just come down, and then we'll go
up.
And so he actually got there, which I can't believe it, a guy in his 70s running up the down escalator and reaching the top.
But those kind of behaviors, like there's just a lack of inhibition.
Lack of inhibition, impulsive behavior, no judgment.
Well, and also, you know, Alzheimer's, people with dementia can be very, very mean and nasty. I don't know if your husband ever exhibited that, but...
No, he was a real sweetheart.
Right.
I think sometimes, you know, the underlying nature comes out. So if a person might be kind of nasty and they suppress it, yes. But then he was a sweetheart all the way through. So he was very sweet. He was kind of like a little baby towards the end. It was kind of cute. But, you know, it was terrible.
But see, have you not heard that? Because I've read that it's quite commonplace that people with dementia, they get quite nasty. I know my grandfather did. I mean, we had to transfer him to different nursing homes because he kept getting kicked out for bad behavior.
When my husband was in the nursing home at the end, there were a lot of different patients there. And I saw some of them would, like, try to slap the nurses taking care of them.
Yes.
Or they'd be yelling obscenities and all kinds of things. But my husband was a sweetheart. He really just got sweeter. It was like a little baby, you know.
God bless him, yeah.
Completely innocent at the end. But maybe the Lewy body dementia people are a little different than the Alzheimer's people.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, my grandfather, like, he got a little nasty at the end. Now, so you're sitting there with your husband. You go in. Something's obviously not right. So you go in for a diagnosis. You get the diagnosis. What does that feel like? It must have been like somebody punched you in the guts.
Oh, it was horrible. I started crying. I took my husband to my hospital, NYU, and I took him to one of the best places there where they diagnose Alzheimer's and have a dementia and cognitive center. And a really great doctor who's been working on Lewy body dementia, it turns out his father had it. He made the diagnosis on my husband. And, you know, when he said that, I was crying. I was upset. I could hardly think. You know, you can't function at a time like that. My husband was very calm, and he said, "Oh, don't worry about it." He was still in the denial. But, of course, my denial had been broken by that escalator episode.
Incident, yeah.
And a few other things had happened. And I was no longer in denial. I just had to confront this face on. And
well, one of you had to.
Yeah, it was me. And this is the problem. The caretaker, the caregiver, has to do all the work. And the person with the diagnosis, they could just say, "Well, don't worry about it. It's no problem."
Was that sort of your husband's thing the whole way through? Like, don't worry. Like, did he ever flip out? Because I think I'd flip out if somebody gave me the diagnosis.
He never flipped out. He was so calm, I couldn't believe it. And he tended to be anxious at times when he was healthy. He was anxious like I would be anxious, you know, at different things when he had problems to solve or a lot of work to do. He would get anxious. But he was calmer than he ever was. I never saw him so calm.
Wow.
So it had the opposite effect on him. And then, as I said, he became a little baby, so everything was taken care of. So he didn't have to worry. Well, he didn't worry about anything.
Right, right. And again, it's almost like God's mercy in those diseases that people kind of lose their mind. And I know that you said that the most difficult part was accepting his degeneration. Like I said, with my mother, like watching someone who was vibrant and just had the world by the, I don't know what I'm allowed to say, but and just to go, I know I'm just to go. My boss is looking at me, and then just to go down to nothing. You know what I mean? Like that was the hardest part for you was your husband.
Right, right, right. And he was a lovely man, and we'd been together for 40 years. So here was a person who was like part of me. I'd grown up with this person.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, there's his death sentence, and I have to deal with it. And everybody else in the family kind of copped out. And I was left doing all the work, which happens a lot. The wife has to do the work, or the mother has to do the work, or the son or daughter,
the
work, or the grandchild. And one person is left holding the bag, and a lot of people cop out unless you have a good family structure. Which...
Well, and that's what I want to talk about when we come back. I want to talk about coping, because essentially that's what once you accept it and once everybody's on board, you do have to – you've got to – you know, you've got to pull up your big girl panties and decide how to cope, because it's not going to change. You guys, we're going to come back with Dr. Carol W. Berman. She's a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU and author. She's also in private practice. Today, we're talking about dementia and dealing with it and coping if you or a loved one is stricken with this. You're listening to Tara Marie Live. I'm your host, Tara Marie Segundo. The call-in line is 888-411-7242. We'll be right back after this.
Be proud, be loud on American Latino Radio.
Did you wake up this morning with sore knees, hands, or other sore joints? Don't go another day feeling this way. Join thousands of satisfied customers and try NovaJoint. Designed by a doctor to nourish and lubricate your joints, NovaJoint works fast, without glucosamine, chondroitin, or any of the other ingredients that have disappointed people for years. Customers love NovaJoint because it works fast and it's so easy to take. Here's what a customer in New Mexico wrote. My knees felt great after a couple of weeks, and after a few months, I forgot they were ever sore. I would recommend this product to anyone with stiff, achy joints. NovaJoint really works. So don't wait another day. Go to NovaJoint.com and use the coupon code RADIO or call 855-657-7700. Don't wait to feel great. That's NovaJoint.com, and love how you feel.
I am an American Latino, and I have fought for this country since its founding. I sided with Governor de Galvez in support of the revolution against the English to help create this great country, and with Captain Jorge Farragut in the War of 1812 to keep the English from coming back. I fought at the Alamo against the armies of Santa Anna to declare a free Texas, and I knew the pain of brother against brother fighting on both sides of the Civil War. 500,000 American Latinos marched off to World War II as part of the Greatest Generation, and many did not come back. I have soldiered, sailed, and flown to war wherever I've been sent. I'm still fighting in Afghanistan. Since the American Civil War, I have been presented our nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor, over 60 times, more than 40 of those times posthumously. I am an American Latino, and I dare you to say otherwise. A message from American Latino Radio, Sirius XM Channel 154 at AmericanLatinoRadio.net.
Got a question? Don't be shy. It's your health. Call Tara Marie now, 1-888-411-7242. That number again throughout the U.S., 1-888-411-7242.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to Tara Marie Live. I'm your host, Tara Marie Segundo. Today we're talking about dementia, not so much from a medical standpoint, but from the standpoint of coping with it as the family, as the loved one, as the caregiver. Because as we just said at the just before we went to this break, usually the person with dementia at a certain point in the disease process becomes unaware of their lack of cognitive functioning. And they're almost, it's kind of like they're in the good position because they don't really understand what's going on. But it's those of us left behind. It's those of us who are doing the caregiving, the loved ones, that often we're not given the attention and the care that we need as caregivers. And so our own health starts to slip. The call in line is 888-411-7242. That's 888-411-7242. And our guest today is Dr. Carol W. Berman. She's a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU. She's in private practice. She's an author. And today we're actually talking about her forthcoming book, The Man Who Wasn't Really There. And that's the ordeal she went through with her husband, who was diagnosed and eventually died of dementia. Now, Dr. Berman, so we're talking about coping, basically, at this point. You said, you know, in one of your articles, I thought this was great, you said that you got comfort from Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now.
Oh, I love that book. That was so good because, as he says, there is only now, and if we could stay in the now, there's nothing else, and we don't have to worry. It's very hard to actually do what he says.
Right.
But if we could do what he says, you know, so there's only now. So you're with your loved one who has dementia, and you're just concentrating on that moment, and you're doing different things with them. Maybe you're feeding them or you're washing them. And if you could just concentrate on that and just hold their hand or look into their eyes and just love them and be there at that moment, then that's all there is. And if you could do that, that's wonderful. It's so hard to do it, though.
It is. I mean, it is hard to do. You know, children live in the now, and I often envy them. But I remember, you know, when I was taking care of my mother, I would because I knew the end was coming. And anybody listening who's been in this situation can totally understand what I'm saying. And I know you understand what I'm saying, Dr. Berman, knowing that the end was coming, just like if I was combing her hair, I would just relish it because I knew that I wasn't going to get to do this much longer. Do you know what I mean?
That's
like,
right.
That's about being in the now, being in this moment and trying to make the best of it. You've got to see in situations like this, what you have to do is you've got to, this is the classic make lemonade out of lemons because there's nothing, I mean, there's nothing good I can say about it. You know, it is what it is. It's an unfortunate situation, but you don't want to waste these moments that you do have.
Exactly. So sometimes the best thing is just sit there, comb the person's hair, hold their hand, listen to music with them. This helps a person with dementia, and it helps you to
right.
be with them.
Right. And also, I would think, see, I think it also makes the person not feel like a burden. You know, with my mother, we would sit and watch TV. We would sit and watch funny TV shows, you know, things like that. I never wanted my mother to feel like she was a burden to anybody. I always
right.
wanted her to feel like we were just kind of hanging out.
That's the best way. You did the right thing.
Yeah. Now, why do you think it seems, why is it that I see this in many scenarios. I've seen this in a lot of scenarios that I've witnessed. The caregiver burden seems to fall on one particular member of the family. Is it that everybody else bails?
I think everybody else bails. They just cop out. They, you know, they say, oh, she'll do it. And it usually falls on a woman, you know,
uh-huh.
the wife, the daughter, the granddaughter.
Yeah.
You know, we women pick up the burden and guys will say, oh, well, you know, let's go to work or get out of here or whatever. But,
Well, also, sometimes I think the ones who don't deal with it, they can't emotionally handle it. Like, they can't see it. They just can't, psychologically, they can't deal.
That's right. And you have to deal with your emotions. That's the first thing you have to do. I myself went back into therapy. I
uh-huh.
haven't been in therapy for many years, but it was just too much for me to lose my best friend, my husband, this dear person. So I
right.
went back into psychotherapy. I'm still in psychotherapy with a wonderful woman,
mm-hmm.
and it really helped me work through my emotions and focus on positive things and move on to the next stage of life, which I had to do.
Yeah. And if someone said to you, well, Dr. Berman, but like, how did you cope? You know, you talk in one article about going through the stages of what is the word I'm looking for? Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's Stages of Grieving. You literally found yourself going through Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's Stages of Grieving, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, but you said not necessarily in that order. And I so understand what you, when I read that, I so understood it, because you sort of jump from stage to stage, and like you'll go to one stage and you'll think you've progressed, and then 3 days later you'll jump back, you'll regress.
Exactly.
If someone said, how did you cope? I mean, would you just say, I put one foot in front of the other?
Exactly. I would put it just like that. And that's a wonderful book that you just mentioned, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's On Death and Dying.
Yeah.
And she talks about the stages of grief, and they are denial is the first one, and as you said, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. But I did bounce all over the place. And in my book, I have one chapter on each of these stages that I go through, plus some extra stages I went through, like anxiety, somatization, intellectualization, humor. I went through a couple of extra ones that she didn't mention.
Yeah, and to let people understand, somatization is when it takes on a physical, like you said that you got headaches.
I had all kinds of aches and pains. I was doing different things to myself, like at the gym, all of a sudden I fell down, I really hurt my knee.
Yeah.
And I wasn't uncoordinated before, but all of a sudden, you know, I was doing everything wrong because I wasn't concentrating and I wasn't taking one moment at a time, like Tolle says in his book. I was just all over the place.
Yeah.
It almost
feels like you had scattered energy, like you were so overwhelmed. And I see this, and I've seen it in myself. It's almost like you were so overwhelmed by the enormity that your energy started to scatter.
And
that's why at the gym you would trip, or you would do things, you'd do silly things that you never would have done.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
It was when I think what I got from, because I, of course, read all of your articles all in a row.
Almost in sequence.
And what I almost got from it was you went from this very mentally scattered place to a place where you had to go, okay, look, so this is the deal. It is what it is. I don't like it, but I've got to accept it, because if I refuse to accept it, I'm going to continue to not be well myself, and I'm not going to do right by my husband.
Exactly. So, if I get sick, who's going to take care of him?
Right. So it's like the vibe I got from your writing was you got to the point where you were just like, you know what? I've just got to, like I said, pull up my big girl panties and do this, because ain't nobody else doing it for me.
You got it.
I mean, it's awful. You know what I mean? But it's what I think you have to do.
It's what you have to do. It's an emergency state that you have to get into.
Yes.
And then the emergency state lasts for years, so it wears you down. It gives you a lot of post-traumatic stress throughout the whole time, and you have to find ways to cope with it, because I was just talking to a woman today who's taking care of her mother who has dementia, her daughter who's having panic attacks, and then she herself is a mess because she's taking care of everybody. She's the caregiver in the family.
Yeah.
And I said to her, well, you have to take care of you. You have to make time for you. She doesn't make any time for herself either. She's constantly working and taking care of everybody. And that's what happens to a lot of women who start caring for their loved ones like this.
Well, and also if you're in that sandwich generation, where again, so you've got this woman that you're referring to who's taking care of her ailing parent.
Right.
Her daughter who's falling apart. And then this woman works full time, is probably married, has other children,
yeah.
And, you know, has other things going on. And so that's what I'm saying. The caregiver gets kind of forgotten in the shuffle.
That's right. And I am telling her to take care of herself. I was taking care of her mother, giving her mother medication, the mother with dementia. And she would come in with the mother. And I said to myself, what a lovely woman this is, taking care of her mother, taking care of everybody. But then who's taking care of her? And she's not taking care of her. And the
right.
same thing happened to me. I was taking care of him, but not taking care of me, until I said, no, you have to, as you say, pull up your panties and get on with it.
You just have to sometimes roll up your sleeves in life and say, you know what? I hate this, but it is what it is. And you do point out very distinctly in one of your articles, you say that you had to get to the point where you said that the acceptance of your husband's degeneration did not mean that you were giving up. And you had to understand that Because you knew that in order to accept it, you had to tell yourself, this doesn't mean I'm giving up. It just means I'm saying it is. It is what it is.
Right. I was fighting it and fighting it and fighting it in all kinds of ways. And then finally I said, no, I'm going to accept it. I'm going to work through my emotions. I'm going to do everything that I can to help him and help myself. And I'm going to accept what's going on. And you have to accept it. What choice do you have? But you fight it for a long time until finally you say, okay, I'm accepting it, I'm getting it, I'm going to deal with it. But the first, you know, first things are those first stages, like Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said.
Yes, yes. And again, everything, you also, I think, have to be, and you talk about this in one of the articles, you have to be compassionate with yourself.
Absolutely.
This is not a time to be hard on yourself, judging yourself. Why can't I just get over it? Why can't I just pull myself together? Why am I such an emotional wreck? Sometimes you need to just be an emotional wreck for a couple of days, okay?
That's right. And you're not always perfect. You always have a feeling, oh, I have to be perfect. I have to do this exactly right.
Right.
And all that. You can't be perfect. This is such imperfection when you're taking care of people with dementia that you just have to do the best you can, and you're not going to do it perfectly.
Right. Now, how would you suggest, so someone comes to you and says, look, my husband, 62 years old, has just been diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease, and I don't even know how to accept this because I don't accept it. I think it's a bunch of, it's horrifying. What would you say to somebody?
Okay, I would say, let's do therapy. You know, I'll see you once a week or twice a week. We're going to talk about what you're feeling, all your frustrations. Because, first of all, they have to deal with all these doctors who are giving them all kinds of information that they can't even comprehend. At least I had the medical jargon down because I'm a doctor.
Right.
But if you're a layperson, you don't know this kind of thing, that kind of thing. And the doctors a lot of times will just throw terms out at you and say blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, the person doesn't know what the doctor's talking about. So I could be a translator for a person, too. So I would say, you tell me what the doctors are saying.
Right.
Or I'll call this doctor and speak with him or her personally, and then I'll interpret it for you and tell you this is what the doctor means. And so, and then we'll deal with what emotions, what frustrations, you know, and then get you back on track. That's what I would do with a person like that.
Right. And again, you have to acknowledge your own emotions. This isn't a time, if you're the caregiver and you're shouldering most of the burden, this isn't a time to be stoic. You also say that you strongly support getting into some sort of an advocacy group or a support group.
Absolutely.
Where you don't feel you're so alone.
Yeah, there are many groups and many. The Alzheimer's Center here in New York City has different groups that people could go to. They're free. And you could talk with other caregivers, and they have groups for the dementia patients, you know, until they're able to be in that group. You know, at a certain point, they can't be there anymore. But, right, groups are good. Doing yoga is good. Doing meditation, doing exercise, working out.
What would you say to somebody? Because I know, like, in the Latino community, you know, again, we tend to keep our sick at home. We keep our older people at home, and we want to do all the caretaking ourselves. And I think that there's a lot of guilt. I think I can imagine that someone would feel guilty for self-care, but you can't feel guilty. You know, they'd feel guilty or extravagant going to get a massage or going to the gym for an aerobics class.
No, you have to take care of yourself, because if you don't, you fall apart. And if you could afford it, you have to get nurses' aides. I mean, our healthcare system is not that good, because we should have nurses' aides around the clock for a dementia patient so that the other people in the family can get a break, or the one who's the primary caregiver can get a break. But no, we don't have that. So you have to pay out of pocket for nurses' aides. And these people are angels. Again, angels. They come into your house. They take care of a dementia patient. They have to wash the person, they have to change diapers, they have to do all kinds of intimate things like that, and they do it, and these are the best people in the world. And so, you know, and they get the lowest salary.
Right. And you know, you talk about it in the articles, you emphasize that your loved one's death sentence doesn't have to be your death sentence.
Right.
And you
exactly.
Are, yeah, you know, and again, you even mentioned, and again, you're a doctor, you're a physician, that at first you felt like it was your death sentence, too.
I did. I felt like I'm losing my best friend, I'm losing my husband, I'm losing my lover, I'm losing everything. You know, the person was so important to me, and I'm losing everything. So I thought, oh, I'm going to die too. And a lot of times people do die if they've been married so long as we were married, mm-hmm. and then their husband or wife dies. They'll die right afterwards. I saw it in the nursing home. A person would pass away who had dementia, and then the wife or husband would drop dead like in a week or something because they're so attached. You're so attached to this person that you love that you wind up dying yourself. And plus, people haven't taken care of themselves, so they die.
Well, and you write in one of the articles, Five Ways to Emotionally Stay on Track, and you clearly say, remember, you're an individual and not your loved one.
Exactly. And you have to think about that because you become like one with mm-hmm. the person, you know, that you're married to a lot of times that you feel so close to. So you have to separate, individuate, which is not so easy if you've been like operating like one. You eat together, you sleep together, you go on trips together, you work out together, you talk to each other all the time and then text each other and then all of a sudden, boom, you can't do any of that. So you have to individuate, which is difficult. And
how would you suggest someone would tear him or herself? Like, how do you individuate? Because, again, like in the Latino community, our families are so enmeshed.
Right.
It's not even just a husband-wife relationship. I mean, if it's your mother, it's very hard for us to just kind of operate outside, you know, mentally operate not as a unit. Do you understand?
I understand, exactly, because I've had many Latino patients and mm-hmm. I'm thinking of one now who had her mother at home and the mother had dementia and she felt guilty just coming to me to do therapy and she felt a very intelligent woman. She felt guilty going to work, but yet she had to do that to support the mother and herself. And she was very attached. And so how you do it is with therapy, with thinking about it, with expressing your emotions. Maybe you want to do group therapy, but I'm sorry to keep mentioning therapy so much, but it really is helpful to
mm-hmm.
people.
Well, and also you do say in this article where you talk about how to emotionally stay on track, you say, do not underestimate how stressful it is to care for your loved one.
Exactly.
We ourselves underestimate, oh, I can deal with it. No, sometimes you can't and you need help. Now, I want to come back on this thought. You guys, give us a call. Our call in line is 888-411-7242. We're talking about dementia and the profound impact that this disease has on the patient, the caregivers, the loved ones. It has a lot of collateral damage. We'll be right back after this. 888-411-7242. I'm Tara Marie Segundo. You're listening to Tara Marie Live.